It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, just in time for training camp. New uniforms. To some controversy, Bulldog, would you agree today? The helmets, the uniforms, the whole thing?
There's been some things said.
But a lot of things said.
Today, yeah, there's been some things said.
A lot of negativity toward these this new look. Sal Capaccio with us now on the West Her Hotline. I know, Sal, you were up in Canada for much of today. Were you out of the firing line on this one, or what exactly?
Still poking in on it. We did a podcast last night and talked a lot about it at length, Matt Bove and I. Yep. So you can check that out. We gave our thoughts on it and what we kind of thought about it while we were live, and you can, you know, watch the recorded version. You know, I was with some people today. It's for Zach Hyman's event up there, and, you know, and he's a big Bills fan, and people were talking about the uniforms a little bit with me throughout the day. It was going on some Toronto media members that we all know. And so, you know, I guess I got a little bit of it, but not quite to the level you guys did, you know, be on social.
Yeah,
today, I guess.
I watched your podcast. I started when it started, and then I paused, so I, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I watched it, and I thought it was interesting that you and Matt both – had the opposite view of the two, like there's the jerseys, the uniform itself, and then the helmet. And if I've got it right, Matt loves the helmet, but doesn't really like the uniform. And you were more like me, at least what you said last night. Like, I kind of like the gray. I'm not against the gray. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it. The helmet with it, I'm really struggling with.
Yeah, I don't love the helmet. I love having – I think you're in Buffalo. You know, to me, a Buffalo Bills helmet should have a buffalo on it. But I understand you want something unique and different. Like, I understand the perspective of wanting something like that, but it just didn't hit right with me not having a buffalo on it. That being said, the Charge logo, that stripe, has been a predominant theme really since the start of the building of the new stadium. Even the mesh – it's gone in the new stadium that, you know, that wind confusion mesh. It's the Charge is the holes. Basically, it's the shape of that. When you walk through the stadium, you see that. So I understand, you know, why they did that. The jersey itself, I don't mind gray. And as I said in the pod last night, like I'm kind of a traditionalist when it comes to uniforms. I don't love all these new uniforms everybody has all the time. Like, I mean, you know, Oregon was the first, you know, college team several years ago just have all these incredibly new uniforms all the time.
Every week.
And it's like there's too much, right? Like, I don't mind a third or a little bit of a different spin on something, but I'm kind of a traditionalist. In fact, it's kind of funny. Like, I went to Syracuse, and Syracuse and Penn State for many years were rivals, but I actually love Penn State's uniforms because they're clean. They're just all white or all blue. And the gray is fine with me. Like that. And actually, when I saw a picture of a Bills player, I don't know if it was AI or a real picture, like before the unveil today, I said, oh, that actually looks really good. I like that. It is not just sitting on a rack at a hanger where you don't get the full effect. But yeah, I guess the helmet for me was what I didn't love. But Matt loved the helmet a lot more. Like, he really thought that was cool. And I guess it just goes to, it's just like music taste, right? Whatever hits your eyes, your taste buds, your ears.
Your favorite wing place or whatever. Yeah. Someone, I don't think it was Matt, but I saw today, I'd give credit if I could think of who said it, but basically they've put, you mentioned Oregon and Penn State in the same breath here. They put an Oregon helmet on a Penn State uniform is kind of what has happened here. And that's a bit of a weird fit to me. Like I think I might like everything more if the uniform, even though I like the gray, if the uniform were less traditional to go with the very non-traditional helmet, that would maybe make sense to me. So would a more traditional helmet with what is a pretty traditional-looking uniform aside from the color.
Yeah, I totally get it. It seems like it's more of a modern and traditional matching together, mixing together, right? And maybe you want one or the other. Like I said, you want to go with a new uniform here, there. I'm totally cool with it. I have my own thoughts on what like good new uniforms look like and what get people riled up and jazzed up. And to me, and I don't know if the Bills have ever considered this, but it seems like getting a black uniform is a cool thing. Like the Eagles have done it, and the Ravens have done it, and the Dolphins now, what do they want to call their really
midnight
dark
blue,
whatever, it's black, right? Yeah, the Jets have done it. It just feels like that's something that, ooh, yeah, look, the Texans and their real dark blue, you know, something like that. So, but hey, I mean, everybody's got their own thought on it, and you don't, you know, you're never going to please everybody. We know that no matter what you do, and I think the Bills know that as well. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it looks once they trot out on the field, and I agree 100% with your point that you said that, like, once they wear them and Josh Allen's wearing it on the field, like, people will be like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. I want one.
They probably should have known already that they can't please everyone, but they found out today if they didn't. you mentioned Penn State. I can never place the name of the magazine, but I, for some reason, still remember this well and have brought it up before. There was a an oversized, in the 80s, an oversized sports magazine that had a ranking of college football uniforms, and they had the 10 best and the 10 worst. And number one among the best, Penn State. And just a brief description of each one, something like the definition of class. And then they had the list of the 10 worst. Number one, Penn State. Can't you think of anything? Right. Can't you just think of anything literally at all to put on that helmet? Nothing? Okay, that's the best you can do. Great program.
There you go.
Sal Capaccio on the Westshore Hotline. I mean, I grew up as a kid that would draw the logos and loved helmets and uniforms and all of it. And the Bills have mostly had that same image on their helmets ever since. I mean, since what? The late 70s when they, or mid 70s when they switched to the Buffalo
the charging,
with the charging stripe. I don't think I've ever really heard it referred to by name. I mean, I haven't been to the new stadium yet to see this thing, like this whole
charge
imaging.
Stripe. Yeah.
Like I just never even would have thought that the stripe itself
had a name.
Had a name. Could be like a logo almost, basically. Like could even be this. And I don't know. It just looks so. I've never thought to separate it from the Buffalo on the Bills logo. You know, it's just like it's there. It's key to drawing it correctly to know just sort of like
what angle to put it
yes.
at.
And, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. But I'm not even like the least bit familiar with that alone without the animal as like any part of the Bills brand, but it is now.
But I think it evolves over the years, right? Maybe it never was, and then it became kind of a thing, right? Where you're like, oh, they started building the stadium, and hey, you know what? We need this mesh in the holes inside the whatever you want to call
wind
the steel, or however.
Yep.
Yeah, and then someone came up with the idea of, like, why don't we do the Charge logo, like, or Little Buffaloes or something, right? And yeah, the Charge logo's cool instead of just something square. So that became a thing, right? I remember when the Dolphins changed the look of the dolphin himself going through the hoop or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Like, he went from being a happy dolphin to a mean dolphin, right? And that was on purpose. Like, little things like that can matter sometimes, just that little tiny tweak. And, yeah, I think the Charge, the logo, has kind of become a thing, even if it wasn't an actual thing many years ago.
Fair enough.
Sorry, you got me thinking about the dolphin logo. Used to look like a dolphin performing at a water park. Like, I'm happy, I'm jumping through the hoop, and then they changed it to like more aggressive. I can only imagine what the wording in the press release for that looked like or read like.
Right.
But yeah, it was like more streamlined and like it's attacking. It's hunting prey or something, as opposed to just trying to please everybody, which is what the original logo probably was. Too nice.
Now they took the helmet off it on the Dolphins logo.
Right.
They removed the helmet with the
right.
M on it. All right, well, we have something new to argue about. Sal Capaccio with us. Training camp this week. We are just about here. So what's the schedule tomorrow? Just players report and then on the field Wednesday?
Yeah, so players report, and then that's when they'll do their testing, guys. I mean, like, that's the first day, because, you know, we know that because they can't test on Wednesday. There's practice on Wednesday morning. They're not going to be out there doing that, I wouldn't think, at like 6 a.m. So they'll do their physicals and stuff tomorrow and their testing. And if people don't pass that and, you know, aren't in a position to be able to practice, we'll find that out. Now, it could be tomorrow night we find that out. It could be Wednesday morning. I think generally, since, you know, I've been covering the Bills, at least now it is a different regime, but, you know, Brandon Bean's still there, obviously Joe Brady, but it's generally been we find out the morning of, but it has happened the night of the night before. Whereas you find out someone's on PUP, you find out someone's on, you know, got an issue. They didn't pass a physically unable to perform in some capacity. So that's what happens tomorrow. And then Wednesday morning, We will hear from Joe Brady at 8 a.m. They'll be on the practice field at 8:30, and then Brandon Bean will speak afterward.
Do you have top of mind guys who maybe went through the spring stuff with various ailments? I feel like Dorian Williams would be at the top of such a list, that like guys you're kind of on the lookout to hear a clean bill of health or something else on.
Yeah, I think the number one guy for me would be Michael Hoyt, actually, because of kind of his progression through the offseason, from the OTAs, minicamp, where he was last year with the injury, and him saying, like, my goal is to be ready for training camp. Like, and I say that number one for me because I'm just curious, like, is he ready already? So I mean, if he is, I think it's remarkable, to be quite honest with you.
Happens now, you know?
Yeah, so, right.
Daniel Jones today said he was going to be ready. He tore his Achilles late.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, we'll see about him. So, to me, that's the number one, like, intriguing thing. Mm-hmm. At some point, Michael Hoyt's going to come back, as long as he didn't have a setback. So, that could be a week in the training camp. That could be at the end of the preseason, in the regular season. And then, yeah, Dorian Williams is the one that this showed up during mini camp when he did not perform. And we knew he was on crutches and saw him. But he was at a couple of events over the last couple months. One of them was the Poncho's Army meat raffle that I attended. I know he was seen at the Taste of Country by a couple people. He was not using crutches, which is a really good sign. That doesn't mean he's ready to play, but I'm encouraged by that. We'll see what happens with him. Cole Bishop had something cleaned up in his knee and did not perform at all during OTAs and minicamp. He was very certain that he would be ready to go. He said he was staying in Buffalo to rehab, basically, to make sure that everything was, good to go by the time he got there. So those are a few of the guys. Joshua Palmer did actually participate in minicamp after missing most of OTAs, if not all of them. So, that's another guy you kind of on the lookout for. And I think there's just the usual suspects of, are these guys healthy? Are they good? Dalton Kincaid, the load management stuff that came up with him. Not that we're expecting anything, to be wrong tomorrow, but just thing you're looking for. And is he healthy enough? Is he taking a full amount of reps? Max Harrison, after having his injury early in the season, late in the season, and then, coming back, and he was at OTAs and minicamp. So just guys like that you're kind of on the lookout for.
Might want to get back to Kincaid. He was the first name I thought of for this, but although he's not coming off like an injury exactly. But, it's always kind of part of the story with him. But Palmer, I wrote down for Sal's visit today, just in my notes here, before I forget, Joshua Palmer. That's it. Just I wanted to make sure I remembered Joshua Palmer, because he's this year's Curtis Samuel to me, somebody that I just
– Yeah.
It's always Coleman. It's always DJ Moore. It's always, you know, Shakir and whoever else. But, okay, right, Palmer. So this will be for Wednesday, if he's healthy at least. This will be for Wednesday. It's like, I mean, maybe this is the kind of thing that you're not supposed to share, maybe? Like, just who's with Allen? Who's with the ones? Maybe, Palmer could be news either way on that one.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, he did perform. He was available during minicamp. So I'll say this. If he's not available Wednesday, that's a huge red flag. I mean, he was out for OTAs. He came back from minicamp. And then suddenly, he's out again? Like, you're like, okay, but you just can't count on this guy. And you have to start thinking about alternate plans then. For me, the story with Josh Palmer is more of a, I guess I'll call it long-term, like through training camp. Like at the end of camp, where is Josh Palmer? Not at the beginning. I want to know, what is his role? How does he look? What does that group look like? But he's in the group with Keon Coleman for totally different reasons. It's not an injury situation with Keon Coleman. It's doing everything right. Is he making plays? Does he look like a third-year, 33rd pick overall of the NFL draft, right? I mean, like, that's what I'm looking for. Those two guys are really, really key members of the offense and how the offense will be structured from a roster standpoint, because you got Skylar Bell right behind them knocking on the door. Oh, by the way, let's add him to the list. Skylar Bell was not at minicamp. I think people forget about that. I just forgot about that, talking about it. He had an injury at minicamp, but he was inside working with trainers and the jugs machine. I'm not too concerned, but he's a rookie, and he wasn't out there. So go beyond Moore and Shakir, there are question marks all throughout the rest of the wide receiver group. And honestly, like, it's a really big swing depending on how many of those guys are healthy and look good and can do what you need them to do versus how many guys don't.
Yeah, and if I wasn't specific enough, I just want to know if he starts, if he's in the, not the lineup, but if he's like on the field for the first team reps, or is that Coleman instead, or whoever that might be instead, like Palmer, assuming he's healthy enough to participate. All right, is he a starter? That's All question.
Well, I mean, like, it would be like, big news if he weren't, I think.
Yeah, let me ask you guys this. If he's not, does that say more about Josh? If he is or he isn't, I should say, does it say more about Josh Palmer or Keon Coleman, how that goes?
Right.
Well, that depends.
If Coleman's in Palmer's spot, like, if that's obviously stock way up on Coleman, maybe stock down on Palmer, and then we start talking about Brandon Cooks every day.
That's right. I just think those two guys are so interesting. The most interesting person at this camp, I think, is, you know, for this year is Keon Coleman right now because of all this. It's just so much of kind of how that group looks really kind of hinges on, I think, how he looks, what he does, how he performs. And quite honestly, we might not know that until the regular season begins. And that's what's going to be maybe frustrating about all of it, because even if he looks great over the next 4 weeks, it is very, very fair for any person to say, I don't care, show me the regular season.
Sal, on Kincaid, I don't know if you'd have a number at the ready, but listed 6'4", 240, right? And then we get through a season and he's banged up and we need him stronger or just, I don't know.
Bigger. Yeah.
Whatever it is, that'll be a story too. I mean, if he's healthy, great. You'd want to see that. But then also, like, is he different? Is he bigger? Is he different? I mean, is there a weight or a certain thought you have on what's ideal?
I don't know about a certain number as far as a weight, as you say. I will say that, like, standing next to him during minicamp, after practices, I think he looked like an NFL tight end. Like, he looked bigger. He looked more like, he's not Dawson, right? But he looked more like Dawson Knox than he did a wide receiver coming into the league. Like, that's a good thing. He looks like he put on strength and muscle. Now, I think we said that last year about him. It's not that, though. It's the knee that was bothersome. But the other thing, he wasn't wearing a knee brace those last few days, which was really good as well. But I do think he looked bigger. And guys, I actually think he blocked pretty well last year when he was asked to do that. You know, he's not always digging guys out of the box, but he's on the perimeter sometimes, and he does a nice job. And, you know, I think sometimes it's unfair to think about, well, he's got to be a really good blocker. Yes, that's true, but he's not. Like, he doesn't have to be an inline, hand-on-the-ground, down-blocking blocker. But he's got to be willing and capable and to be able to go against guys that are, you know, his size or less and make sure that he wins that rep. And I think he did a good job of that last year when he was on the field.
I remember certainly the opener. I mean, it's a long season. There were 16 other games. But I remember a couple of plays early in the Baltimore game where he was very aggressive with DBs at the sideline. And we even, I'm sure we talked about it then. That it seemed like he was trying to make an impression, at least, that he's willing and able to perform that if asked.
And he is, and I think he is. I think part of it is on the team, though, and rightfully so. They probably have concerns about if we do that too much, what are we doing to his body?
Right.
Like, we need him available to catch passes and run down the field. And I think there's a delicate balance there, but that's the kind of thing that we're all talking about here and how that works out. Oh, look, he had his fifth-year option picked up, which is not this year but next year. So he's under contract for two more years. They have an investment in him. They want to see that through. They want to keep him healthy. But he's also got to be able to do all of those kinds of things to justify kind of that investment they're putting in him.
Always one for me where I feel like I'm getting stuck at every turn. You know, he catches the ball. He's talented. When he is running routes, he gets the ball. I mean, for a tight end, he ranks high in those areas. But if I need him to be bigger so that when he's on the field, I can have him put his hand down and block on, you know, in the running game so that teams don't know what I'm doing, because they throw almost 80% of the time when he's on the field, right, without Knox. The coaches they hate that stuff. They don't want to give it away. Right. I've got Jackson Hawes over here, you know, who can just road grader type, and he was a little bit interesting as a receiver as well. A lot has to go right just for the player physically, and then also for the fit, because it just has never really been smooth with him. There have been good moments, but it's just never really been smooth. So we'll see if this year is any different in that way. There's one where I need to get to week one. I mean, whatever happens that changes that between now and week one would only be negative. It'd be like, well, he's, you know, missing practice or whatever that is. But just like you said about Coleman, got to get me to the season and,
that's right,
you know, see what it looks like then. All right. Anything else on your mind for tomorrow and for Wednesday, I guess, maybe more importantly, with Brady in his first training camp as the head coach? and whatever else.
Yeah, like Mike mentioned that with Brady's first time. Like I'm curious if we'll get the welcome to training camp speech on social media from them with Brady. Like I'm just curious because a part of my sort of concern is even not appropriate. It's just I'm curious, like how comfortable he is and how well, because it's not the easiest thing in the world to captivate. You know, in this case, it's going to be, 90 guys, not just, like, your 53 plus the practice squad like it would be in the regular season. And, like, I watched a clip, I don't know if you saw it, Sal, last week with the Giants starting up earlier. I watched John Harbaugh, who's done that 18 times with the Baltimore Ravens, and it felt like an SNL skit. Like, it just seemed really flat and weird, and, and that's someone who's done it, again, almost 20 different times as a head coach of a team. It's not, I just don't assume that that's going to go, great.
I have not seen that. Now you gave me some homework to do tonight and go watch that from John Harbaugh, so I'll check that out later today. Yeah, I mean, Joe, I think I'll say this about Joe Brady. He seems more and more comfortable in front of a mic or behind it talking to the media, like as he goes on here. We all know he's a super energetic guy and he's willing to kind of just talk, more than McDermott being open. And even during the draft, guys, I don't know if you know this, but like the 3 days that we were down there, the Thursday, the Friday, and then the Saturday, like well before the draft actually started, like Joe Brady just walked in the media room, like, "Hey, buddy, how are you doing? Like, what do you guys think about tonight?" You know what I mean? Like, he's just, I think he's comfortable being like that. So, I think that if he wants to give some sort of rah-rah speech, welcome to training camp, I think he's up for it. And I think the reviews from his players and all the podcasts they're doing, all the things you hear about him, that they love, the energy that he brings right there. So I think that'll be fine for him. For me, you ask me like what I'm thinking about, what I'm looking at. Yeah, that's a little part of it. It's a new defense. It's first time in 10 years the Bills have had a new defense. They have a new defensive coordinator. I mean, I know the names have changed and Leslie Frazier and all that, but this is Jim Leonard's show, man. And, like, I'm really interested to see how that starts to come together because we have not seen that in 10 years.
Also, plenty of new numbers. Make sure you have what you need to know.
Scorecard.
A scorecard, right. Including Tyler Bass, who maybe sold his number 2
to DJ Moore,
and now is wearing number 16. So look for Tyler Bass, who's another guy we haven't seen in a while.
I was playing golf today with Carlo Colaiacovo, and I said, "What do you think about Bobrovsky not giving up the number to Gavin McKenna?" You guys hear about that controversy, right, or that story? It's like the Leafs fans, like he's not – Bobrovsky, so what number is it, 70?
72.
Two, thank you, 72, sorry about that. And he says so Bobrovsky comes and McKenna's worn 72, but that's been Bobrovsky's number. Fans are like, "Oh, yeah, good to McKenna." I guess Bobrovsky's like, "No, that's my number." And I think some fans, like, he's not ingratiating himself. But Carlo's opinion, I believe, was, "No, I get it. Like, Bobrovsky wants it. Like, he's the veteran or whatever." But that is an interesting dynamic, right? The guy's been there for a while. I know he's a kicker, Tyler Bass, but here's a guy that's had some success here in Buffalo, and he decides, "No, I'll give that to DJ Moore."
Maybe Bobrovsky doesn't need like a new car or a fridge that he would probably able to negotiate for. I know the kid's just in the league, but still. All right, Sal, thanks for today, and we'll probably want to reach out tomorrow too with the first day.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Maybe stock up for when you turn on the Bills and they're wearing gray.
Right. And some crazy blue helmet.
Of all colors, gray. Barely a color. I don't know. Not a fan. 803-0550 for your thoughts. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.